On today's episode of Work Trends, we're talking how Hollywood is killing HR with Lisa Pryor. Welcome to the Work Trends podcast from Talent Culture. I'm your host, Megan Ambiro. Every week, I interview interesting people and brands who are reimagining work. For more information, be sure to check us out at talentculture.com and join us live on Twitter every Wednesday at 1:30 p.m. Eastern using the hashtag WorkTrends. Today's guest is Lisa Pryor. Lisa is a leadership coach and change consultant who works with leaders to bring out the best in themselves and, as importantly, their people. Welcome to WorkTrends, Lisa.
Thank you, Megan. It's so great to be here.
So, Lisa, I know that your connection to work started very early in your life. Tell us about growing up in a company town and what you learned about work.
Excellent. So I did. I grew up in the world's first rubber town. If you've ever heard of Charles Goodyear or vulcanized rubber, or if you've ever worn KED sneakers, they came from a town called Naugatuck, Connecticut. And I grew up in this small factory town where our life was orchestrated by the whistle that would go off and tell the workers, you know, when the shift changes happened. But my dad, like many people in a factory town story, went to work very young for the company and rose in the ranks. And our life was very connected. My neighbors all worked, you know, in the factory town, in the factory, and including next door neighbors who were like grandparents to us. And I only recently learned that, in fact, Mr. Pakula reported to someone who reported to my dad. And it was just that kind of level of people of all backgrounds and levels living and working together. It's all connected.
Hold on. Speaking of connected, everybody, my mother is from Waterbury, Connecticut.
No.
Yes. I'm from Fairfield, Connecticut. Oh, so surprise, Lisa, we have, you know, many layers of connection that we didn't even know about until 15 minutes ago. I find this just completely fascinating.
The small world, right? and Waterbury itself being a really important factory town, right, in the world. It was the brass city of the planet at one point.
At one point it was. And so much has changed in Connecticut and in a lot of places around the world, actually. But that depth of connection that I also have with my family and that bond with people in their families is strong there. Strong in New England, too. I mean, I'm based out of Cambridge, Massachusetts, so I'm still here on the East Coast. I just kind of moved up north a bit. But, you know, one of the things that I've been concerned about is that loyalty and that security and that feeling of bonding, is that still relevant today? Like, are we losing some of that?
Well, certainly the way that work is designed now, it's no longer the factory town. And so many of us are either working in the gig economy or we're working in organizations that are widespread throughout the planet and people not even meeting each other sometimes in working. And so absolutely the old way of work just kind of naturally had structure and framework for people to connect. There was, of course, that idea that my dad and his colleagues benefited from. He, you know, retired from the company with a gold pin with four little gems, one for each decade of service, which really was, you know, as you said, Megan, that symbol of loyalty and security. And so I think where we're left today for ourselves as we're in this transition to a new way of work is having to create community and our own form of what security means for each of us while we make our way.
Speaking of making our way, let's talk a little bit about leadership. I think there's a lot of leaders out there that still struggle with this concept of culture and people and making everything work with the business bottom line. What can leaders do to build this connection more with their people right now?
It's a great question. And I think that why it matters is that in the world that we're in, the companies that are going to win, the organizations that are going to really achieve their goals are actually going to create the kind of culture that builds this connection. And so there are a number of things that leaders can do. So first, just when you think about an organization, leaders have to pay attention to what we call the hardware side of an organization, right? That's, you know, what's the strategy? What's the playbook? What are the goals and objectives? And how do we measure? And of course, leaders have to pay attention to that. That gets measured, whether it's on Wall Street or with stakeholders. But what often gets shortchanged is what I call the software side. The important stuff like what's the vision? What is the way that you want people to relate to each other? How do you want them to collaborate and communicate across groups? And the software, leaders like to talk about it. But I think what is often lacking is what is your specific expectation of the executive team and the team that reports to them and so on around the kind of environment that they create for people to work in. So leaders can pay attention to culture by being really clear, not only about the expectations, connecting that to rewards, and ensuring that someone, the leader has to own the culture, but someone has to be stewarding along the activities that can help create the culture and make it happen. So those are three things that leaders can and should be doing if they want to create the kind of operating environment that is going to attract and retain talent in one of the tightest labor markets in business history that we're facing right now.
I love that you're actually drawing in software and technology with this picture. How ironic. That's where I grew up, in the recruiting markets, right?
Yes.
And still play very deeply in the tech space. But you're right. It's like an operating system when you start looking at what a culture is. And you are probably the first person when talking about leadership that's discussed this with me. So that's fascinating.
Oh, that's great. That's great. Well, I believe it very strongly. And, you know, Megan, back to your recruiting days, you'll really resonate with this. I had the chance to be in a conference recently where the chief economist for RSCM talked about the kind of tight labor market that we're in, where there's really barely one qualified applicant for many of the jobs that are out there. And culture and connection are really going to be the defining features mm-hmm. of companies that win.
No question about it. It's actually been that way for many years now, but I think we've brought this conversation to the forefront. And I think it has a lot to do with social media and podcasting and all of these tools that we have to actually communicate what's really going on. Because there's still a talent crunch, especially when you start talking about women in tech, right?
Right.
And diversity. We can get into all of that as well, but there, no question about it, Lisa.
Yeah.
So listen, I heard you were speaking at a Disrupt HR event recently, and you did this really interesting talk about how Hollywood is killing HR. And that's one of the things that really captured my attention about you. So I'm super curious. I mean, I have kind of a fascination, as you can imagine, with talent and
right.
culture.
Right.
In Hollywood, of course, growing up in the performing arts. But tell me what that means and tell us.
Absolutely. So business experts have been talking for many years. The first time I encountered this idea of the Hollywood model was a couple decades ago. And the idea is that as organizations have changed, you know, my old factory town, the old company way was that organizations were structured like a pyramid, right? There's workers at the bottom, the leaders at the top. And then we began to experience a shift. And that kind of became what we've called the matrix, right? The matrix management became the way that we would look at organizational structure. And it's not sufficient anymore, Megan, because of the way that technology is working, the way that we've got so many different kinds of employees now, whether they're gig economy or they're regular employees. So experts have started talking about this idea of the Hollywood model, where people will come together the way they do in Hollywood around a big film. They'll make the film and they'll disperse. And so the idea is there'll be an executive producer who brings in the talent. There'll be a stage crew. They come together. They do the work or the project and then they disband. And that idea has been killing HR because we've been still using the same same tools and, frankly, mindset that we did in the industrial era to try to create a new reality, and it's just not working. So that's been a big part of my talk on how Hollywood is killing HR, because we're still trying to, it's been murder on our workplace, right?
Yeah, absolutely. And I mean, there's a lot of companies right now who are 1000% virtual, and it's happening every day. So this is only actually, to your point, increasing daily, weekly, monthly for us. So I'm so glad you brought this up. Like, we have to talk about this. And I absolutely love the analogy. So I'm wondering, how can HR step into this shift and move to a model and create more connection with people, even when we're all working in the gig economy with a combination of, you know, employees, freelancers, contractors, you name it?
That's right. It's to me, you've just hit the nail on the head of the most essential point. And I think that even though the Hollywood model has its appeal for so many reasons, I also think it can be a bit dysfunctional. And, you know, certainly we've seen enough headlines out of Hollywood recently that we don't need to kind of go down that path any further. But more importantly, in that Hollywood model, there is no depth of connection. It's, you know, people coming together and then disbanding and not, you know, having a connection afterwards. And that's unfortunate, because even if we're not regularly affiliated with an organization, I find that many, many organizations, whether they're major universities or major companies or mid-market companies, are having to kind of bring in what we're calling the contingent workforce. And that's only going to grow. And I think the new model, the way that we need to think about it, is not so much about Hollywood, but really about what is that nexus where people's passion and talent meet what the organization's goals are. But it's more than just like a Venn diagram overlap. I think that the nexus also includes some kind of ability to either create community or to enable and leave the world a better place. I think the millennials are a great example. And I think they're driving a lot of this change. And it's wonderful, because in my old factory town, that community connection was already there, right? Like, you worked, you knew your neighbors, but we're so pulled apart that the nexus idea is really not just about employees and organizations, but how we also kind of bring community into that third dimension as well.
Community, hashtag work trends, join us. Speaking of, I love community. And I will say, Lisa, that I think it's every generation. I'm a little bit over the millennial discussion, but, you know, I've been having it for too many years now. I think it's really up to all of us to talk about it, to unpack it. It is absolutely the super glue. I believe that in my heart and soul, that community is that super connection of passion, talents, and goals. And we each have to kind of bring something to that. It's really about giving and taking. Right. That's what we're talking about, and being okay with that. Because when you give, you really do get back, but it's a sacrifice. I think there's a real, you have to think about it in a way that you're not going to get what you need in the first week of building a community.
Community, it
takes thought, it takes action, and it takes a lot of patience. I think so often people forget that.
That's right.
It takes, you have to be a sponge, you have to learn, and you have to be flexible, and you have to make mistakes.
That's right.
And I think it's a metaphor for something we call culture.
That's right.
I love this whole concept of nexus. How do we make more people realize that it's not just that Venn diagram? Because I think so many people go right to that.
That's right. I appreciate that. So here's what I believe to be true about the nexus. I think that where connection is now the super glue that kind of brings all these pieces together, people have been telling us for a very long time what it means to them to feel that connection to an organization. And Megan, you're really familiar with the numbers. We've seen them for years, that 70% of the workforce is disengaged. I saw some really startling numbers last fall in a report that came out in the Washington Post, that more than 60% of people feel ignored by their supervisors and feel isolated and disconnected from their colleagues. So what human resources can do is to stop thinking about, we tend to think about the employee experience as something that we're going to create all these programs for and initiatives. And instead, I think we have to shift our mindset to say the nexus is really the idea that the employee experience is now the work experience itself. And, you know, in the old way, we used to be able to send people to a week-long training program in a classroom, and people had more time to take lunch, you know, together and hang out by the water cooler that enabled collaboration. And companies would have, you know, annual parties, and so there'd be like a company outing. But now, the work experience is the classroom, the collaboration, and the company outing. And we have to start trying to enable and empower managers and employees. We tend to focus so much on managers, we forget employees are actually hungry to be more fulfilled in their work, so that they're creating the work experience in a way that gives them purpose and relationship and development that helps them take charge of their lives by taking charge of their careers.
And guess what? If you don't, as an employee, you can't complain about it, because I think, right? I mean, so I think it's a two-way street. I'm so glad you brought up employees, because I feel like it's missing in this experience equation. You know, it's like we all have to take control now.
That's exactly right.
Not just leaders.
That's exactly right. It's and again, it goes back to our own human resources mindset is still operating around that pyramid, right? When we think about engagement, we think about engagement as a top-down initiative. We don't give employees enough tools, and sort of enabling them, empowering them, and having the message, everyone has to take charge of their own engagement. And we're in a world where your ability to identify what an organization needs and how that, how your own talents might not only help the organization, but maybe benefit the community as well. Everyone's got to be creative now in identifying and creating the work that's meaningful to them, the organization, and maybe even the community.
Your new book is about career development. So how does career development fit into this conversation?
It's a great question. So I go back to this idea that employees have been telling us for decades through the engagement surveys. You've seen that number, 70% are disengaged. We don't even have to run those surveys anymore to know that career development is going to surface at a minimum in the top five drivers of employee engagement. And HR audiences know well, you know, what engagement means, people's willingness to go that extra mile above and beyond, give their extra energy. And, you know, let's go back to where you started our conversation, Megan, which was that loss of loyalty and security. Career development, I think, is the new job security. And so it has become essential in the organization's fabric, in the depth of connection between people and the organization. And again, because we keep approaching career development as if it were some kind of top-down initiative, we don't put enough tools in people's hands to help them meet us halfway.
Well, let's take a moment today, because I feel inspired by this, Lisa. Like, let's give everybody tools. Like right now in this moment, everyone, hashtag work trends, share with us, what tools are you using? What do you think about this? How can people take charge of their own career right now?
Yeah, I think that there are what I call the four skills for life and career in this new way of work. And the four skills are, first, to have a vision for your life and how career fits into it. You know, we talk a lot about having a more integrated work life, right? And the idea of work balance is old. It doesn't exist anymore. And it was never a great idea because of, you know, organizations being open 24/7. So it's up to each of us now to have a vision, that sort of visceral picture that you feel in your gut about what's the life you want to have and how will work fit into that. That's the beginning. I think the second skill is what I call insight, which is not just your self-awareness of your strengths and maybe those areas to improve, but also what's your impact on others? How do people experience you? And with true insight, we're willing to take our self-awareness and actually work on changing a behavior. That's to me what insight, that's what differentiates just self-awareness from insight. You understand yourself, but you're taking the initiative to change something. So vision insight helps you understand, you know, where you are relative to your vision. The third skill is engagement. And Megan, it's just as we were talking about, how do you create your own engagement? How do you create and find the work opportunities in that nexus between your passion and talent and what the organization needs? And I think that too many times when we talk about career development, it's a little bit of sort of rainbows and pie in the sky, and we don't help people enough understand what the organization's needs and how they can work with their manager to create more meaningful work opportunities that are developmental for themselves and for the organization. So if you have vision for your life and how work fits into it, you have insight about your strengths and your impact, and you can have a plan for how you want to create engagement. But if you don't have the will to make it happen, then these are just ideas that are going to sit in your journal or in that training program you just went to on career development. So will is how you actually make it happen. So vision, insight, engagement, will. I think that's actually a roadmap for life and career in this new way of work.
You know what I think? I think a lot of people are scared. I think we got a lot of fraidy cats out there of the insight. I've woken up and gone, I got to sit here in a room and I got to ask people what they think of this. And I have to be okay with getting that feedback, negative or positive or in between. I think a lot of people are fearful of insight. Thoughts on that?
I think that's a great insight that you just had as well. And my thought is I can't even count how many folks I have coached and we've worked with that 360 feedback. And it can be really, really hard to hear. But I have to say that overwhelming number of people, once you get that feedback, you see it as a gift. And it's just like any muscle, the skill of reaching out and getting feedback or feed forward, the more you do it, the easier it becomes. So doing little things, you don't have to, you know, have a whole 360 experience, doing little things in terms of just reaching out to colleagues and asking for feedback on how did I do in that meeting? What went well? What could I do differently? The more you do that, the more you can deal with those feelings of feeling afraid, of what the answer is going to be, because then you can do something about it. And I have one colleague, my friend Nancy, I'll just leave with this. I love what she says. Nancy will say, everything is the same as it was yesterday after you've received feedback. The only thing that's changed is that now you're aware.
Right.
I think that's a great way, because now you can do something about actively working with people and their perceptions and experience of you.
I like to say communication equals love.
Yes.
And I really, truly believe that, you know, and you have to realize that most of the time it's going to be unconditional. You don't have to be fearful. And if it's not unconditional, so be it.
That's right.
Take it and use it as a tool to improve. Now, speaking of improvement, let's talk to managers in this question. What do managers need to know about helping employees on this particular journey?
Yeah, great question, Megan. And here's what in my experience, and I think even if you are out there reading about leadership and management, we expect as managers, people come to us for answers. And it's very easy for us to give the answers. And what managers also need to shift in terms of mindset is that it's not any longer, your job isn't about answers. It's about asking those big, powerful questions and learning how to bring the classroom, the collaboration, and the company outing into the work. So here's a specific example of that. Someone is going into an important meeting, someone who reports to you. taking even 5 or 6 minutes before the meeting to ask, you know, what do you want to have happen? What does success look like? What mistakes could you make? How will you manage those? And then taking another few minutes afterwards to debrief with the person. Here's the key idea. This wasn't my idea. It's John Dewey, who was well-known educator in the U.S. We don't learn by doing. We learn by reflecting on what we're doing. And so the managers who can learn to use powerful questions, who manage and allocate their own time and energy so they prioritize this, are not only going to get more work done and better quality work because people will be engaged. There's something in it for them. They're learning. They're also going to build a reputation for themselves. Managers who learn how to be great coaches in the workplace are going to be the people that others want to work with and for. That's just one practical idea, and it's a mindset shift, and questions are your tool.
The other thing I would add is the importance of scheduling time for reflection.
Yes.
I think so often in my own life and other people that I know in business circles, we just don't do that enough. Like, we just don't take that time to go, what's happening? Like, how do I actually feel about this?
That's right. That's a great point. I was literally coaching a mid-career manager yesterday who started our conversation with exactly what she said. I want to schedule time so that my folks can come together and learn. And as we started to get into how she envisioned this meeting, the hardware took over, right? What happens is these good intentions get hijacked by the fire that has to get put out today, the report that was due yesterday, the quality challenge we didn't anticipate that's blowing up somewhere. So it's scheduling the time and then finding a way to hold yourself accountable when that time that you've scheduled gets eaten away to make sure it happens.
One of the coolest themes in your book is to recruit your boss. Love this. So tell us what you mean by that.
Excellent. So, you know, your boss, it can be a great ally in your career. And so many people, the numbers showing us, 60%, up to 60%, feeling like their boss doesn't have their back. And I think the question that we all tend to come to our work with is, well, what can my boss do for me? And it can be challenging, but how can we turn that around and recognize and have empathy for the challenges our boss is facing? Someone once said to me, so it sounds like your message is bosses are people too. And there's some truth in that. But if you can work with your boss in a way that creates a win-win, recruiting your boss to be your ally in your career development can be one of the most important moves that you can make.
Just getting to know your boss. It could be that simple or that complex, right? For many people. Lisa, thank you so much for sharing with us and being here today. We appreciate it.
Oh, it's been such a pleasure, Megan. Thanks for having me.
Thanks for listening to Work Trends from Talent Culture. If you enjoyed this episode, subscribe wherever you listen to podcasts. And I'd be really grateful if you took a moment to leave a rating and review on iTunes. It helps other people find our show. If you know someone who would enjoy listening, please share it with them. You can learn more about the future of work at talentculture.com.